The Mystery of the Lost Lenore, Part 1. "There it is," he cried. "There's the lost city." I could see nothing, as my heavy fur hat had slipped down over my eyes again, and I was, with great difficulty, engaged in disentangling my left hand from the strap that held my saddlebag to the little horn thingy on my camel seat. I was, consequently, somewhat less excited than Roger, this being the general rule of our acquaintance thus far. In addition, my buttocks were quite sore, and although, according to my recent reading, in some individuals this produces a state of profound excitation, in myself it was producing quite the opposite state. I was merely tired and fed up. One expects a lost city to be somewhat difficult to find, but this one had been ridiculously lost. I half expected to find a lot of single socks lying about once we had passed through its dingy yet garish portals. When I agreed to accompany Roger on this expedition, I had thought it might be fun and a bit of a diversion from my usual routine of evenings at my club, but I had not fully considered the possible problems and discomforts involved in such an enterprise. Of course, I had been drinking. Lost cities were mentioned, and I made promises I clearly should not have made. One hopes that one learns as one gets older, but apparently, based on the best evidence that I have seen to date, one does not. I suppose I should start this story at the beginning, that is, if you are at all interested in hearing it, and as you've listened this far, I'm assuming that you are. I was, as I said, accustomed to spend most of my time at my club, the Amphiarthrosis, where I had worn two semicircular grooves in one of the better leather chairs in the old library, and I was loath to allow some clubmate to wear down his own distinctive impression into what I had come to think of as my chair. It was my single-minded dedication to this goal that had prevented me from getting involved in such schemes as Roger's expedition to this point. Roger was not a member of my club. His own club was one of those overactive ones that were always sending off expeditions or engaging in sporting events. They even had a few scientifically inclined gentlemen who gave lectures and demonstrations involving the collection of gases and such like. At the Amphiarthrosis, the only gas collecting happened during our luncheon buffets and regular dinners, and its dispersal was done discreetly afterwards, generally in the library, by surreptitiously raising oneself slightly from one of the indentations in one's chair. We were a quiet club. There was none of the conspicuous hurly-burly and tomfoolery of Roger's. It is a story told with some pride by Amphiarthrosians that when one of our members passed away after dinner, in his usual chair, it was not discovered until his pipe fell in his lap and the fire failed to rouse him. The club staff, the souls of discretion, had neatly extinguished the blaze and removed the charred remains of the Times from his lap when they noticed that he was breathing even less than a club member of his advanced age was wont to do. Roger, needless to say, found my club rather too slow-moving for his taste, although, as I have said, it suited my tastes to a T. Whenever he would visit me there, he would stand, shuffling from foot to foot, looking irritated and refusing to sit. He made my clubmates nervous. His very appearance was unsettling to our indolent crew, whereas we tended towards cardigan sweaters, baggy wool pants, and slippers. Roger had a tendency to dress in kayaking pants and mountain boots, a lot of polar fleece and such like. He always looked like he was either heading out on or coming back from supervising a junior high school canoe trip. In retrospect, I wonder why I was ever friends with the man. He was not a bad fellow, really, just a little too active for my taste. I would have been perfectly happy to have read his postcards while seated comfortably in my accustomed roost and sipping my postum, but alas, I made the near-fatal error of accompanying Roger to his club one evening for drinks. Normally I could not be enticed into the place. It was entirely too vigorous and healthy for my taste. But they had recently hired a new barman, who, I had heard, made a fabulous sidecar. I am a sucker for a good sidecar. And so I found myself leaning against a bar in the club, listening to Roger's drunken friend Alvi Ole explain their motto, Periculis Poco Curantes, which essentially means guys who care little for danger. That seemed the wrong sentiment for these people entirely. They seemed, in fact, to have a great affection for and attraction to danger. For instance, that evening from my vantage point, I could see at least three people running with scissors, and two members who were heading down to the pool a scant 5 minutes after devouring a pretty dicey-looking pound cake. Madness reigned in that edifice. But I know what you're thinking. Why didn't I have a sidecar, too, and then scurry back to my own little safe haven, where individuals were cautious and not so casual with their own lives and safety? Where, if a member were inclined to go swimming, and that in itself was very rare, although most of us enjoyed a good soak in the tub, he would wait a good fortnight after nibbling even a baby carrot. Where a member was disinclined to use scissors that were not approved for use by kindergartners, and would never have considered breaking into anything quicker than a trot, unless his life or seat at dinner were at stake. I'm wondering it now, too. In my defense, I will say this. I was drunk. Those damn sidecars were so tasty that I had of them, and then Roger's idiot friend Alvi got on to slagging my club. Old men, he called us. I believe the expression pencil neck was used. And I seem to recall the phrase spindly little arms and prominent man breasts. Normally I would not allow myself to be baited by this kind of barroom bandage, but filled to the brim with lemon juice and brandy, I pulled myself up to my full 5 feet 4 inches of height. As Mae West would say, I'm not interested in the 5 feet and don't make me laugh. I looked him straight in the tie string of his authentic Andean hiking vest and said, I can hardly believe it now, I can do anything that you can do, only I can do it much better than you are currently or ever will be able to. And as well, your mother is accustomed to wear military footwear, or words to that effect. Roger helped me off the floor and suggested, since Alvi's incredible joviality indicated that he did not take the boast part of my statement seriously, that I back up my statement with action. It was obvious that my falling backwards and striking my head on the footrail of the bar was not going to suffice, as far as they were concerned, for a proof of my dormant physicality. Whether it was the blow on the head or the sidecars, I then agreed to accompany Roger and Alvi on this search for the lost city of Lenore. That is how I ended up struggling with my seat on an ill-tempered and flatulent camel in the highlands of this godforsaken country, so far from my comfortable and much-missed seat in the Amphiarthrosis Club.